because I think we should start with our meeting, otherwise we'll not make it. I've been told the CFO will start the presentation. But before we do that, can we open our meeting with a silence of short prayers and meditation? Can we? Thank you very much. All members, let me take this opportunity to welcome you again in our meeting together with the Department of Health, our officials in our meeting, recent meeting with the Department of Health in terms of their strategy and budget before we present it to the House. I want to start with the apologies that I have received. I received an apology from the Honourable Minister, who is in Cabinet today, and also an apology from the Deputy Minister, who is also has got other commitments. I also have a standing apology of Honourable Mamburu, as well. Now that she's still on sick leave, we also receive an apology from Honorable Zwane, who is on study leave. I have hoped to introduce a new member. I'm hoping that she will join us during the course of the meeting. From Free State, there has been a replacement, Ms. Mashodi. Honorable Mashodi will be joining this committee, replacing Honorable Plage. Those are the apologies that I have, Honorable members. In terms of the staff, I have only one apology from Tabile, who is on study leave. Those are the apologies, all the members that I have in front of me. We are going to start our meeting, all members. Fortunately, the DG has joined us. But I do want to say that is a comment that we want to make from our side, that this planning is putting us in a very awkward position at times, because it's not the making of us as a committee or the department is our system. Because we start this briefing before we know what has been achieved by the department during the previous financial year. It is putting a committee in a very awkward position because you don't know what has not been achieved, which has to be taken into consideration as we plan for this financial year. I don't know when, but it's something that has to be considered. That is why sometimes DG find that you have over achievement, because sometimes those are the things that you were supposed to do in the previous financial year and now they are carried forward. Maybe you will be in a position, even though you don't have an official report, you will be in a position to speak to them to say there are things that we have planned which we have not achieved as a department and would like them to be part of the financial year. So that please, as a committee, we have an idea. Because the report comes after we have finalized planning, which is a little bit awkward for me or for the committee. Having said that, DG, I'm sorry. I have to hand it over to you. I know that you've been rushing and running, but unfortunately we have to start because we're having another department today. We are going to give you 1.5 hours for the presentation. It's an important meeting. We must be clear on what is happening. And we're going to give you 1.5 hours. We'll give another hour to members to interact with the presentation from the department. If that is in order, can I hand over to you, DG, to lead the presentation? Thank you.
Good morning, Honourable Members. Good morning, Chairman. Wednesday.
Thank you for giving us this opportunity, and indeed we also highlight on the area and she can also request the COO because we work from the SS Water Report to just highlight this area of the community as we go along. Our vision is that of actually long and healthy life for all Karatki, but also our mission is to improve the health status of Karatki, that through prevention of illness, promotion of health, and also ensure that service delivery is improved. And this is done in the future of access, equity, efficiency, quality, and sustainability. We print our presentation this time, honorable member, on this board and document. If you may recall, in September, the United Nations Global Change that has been the development. We have looked at specific areas that we think need to feed into our sustainable development. In addition to this, we are also guided by the National Development Plan, the Strategic Framework, and the Strategic Plan. Honourable members, I think there was a bit of a confusion this morning in that with the report for NHLA in this meeting. So the NHLA was subsequently cancelled, the science is the PDA also.
Okay.
So, Chair, in trying to align the NDP, priorities as well as our strategic goals, what we will be doing is to look specifically at the sustainable development goals in the future. And, Chair, may I just say that I was appointed to the head of the panel for the Secretary General of the United Nations on the sustainable development goals, but to look specifically at access and one of the things that gives special attention to, I think it's aimed at achieving universal health coverage. So if you look at the common themes, universal health coverage is one particular area that is achieving opportunity. And it is mainly because there are certain areas where access to the concern, access to maintenance, access to services, access to diagnostics and therapeutic intervention. So in doing that, Chair, we also present relative to the program. I'll start with program one, which is the program about administration. And this program is mainly to provide support services to the department. It is most for the time range. And it deals with human resource development management, labor relations, information, communication and technology, property management, security, legal services, supply chain and financial management. And in this, we actually, and I know that honorable members have asked the question, why do we introduce the office of provinces in our plan? We do that because we'd like to continue to support provinces to achieve good audit outcomes. And for this financial year, we said we target 4, because last year 3 provinces achieved an unprecedented of and one of them was in Malaysia. And we're hoping that 2 of them were so close that they would get had 5. And we're hoping that it still be achieved. We still have an unqualified opinion, but for the department, we're hoping that we have a clean audit soon, and maybe the CFO can confirm that. But in addition, we also have worked on the improvement of access to wellness process for staff. In addition, we have developed a business continuity plan, but the focus in this financial year is that we'd like this to be implemented across all our not just our office in Pretoria. We have other offices, including the functions that we took over, Port Health offices, Port Health services, which are rendered in all sorts of entries, just to ensure that there is a disaster recovery plan for all of us. For instance, the chemistry labs are also an area of focus on. For communication, we've developed a toolkit in the top financial year, and for this financial year, we just want to make sure that there's implementation of the project. The vacancy rate, Chair, we achieved 5%, and we'd like to maintain that 5%. And I would like to assure the honorable members that less than 10% should not suggest that we are going to lower the 5% and even below. In terms of performance arguments, my opinion is that it should always be 100%. But for newer people who join the service, they don't have to comply, but we count them in when we count. They have a 3-month lag period. But otherwise, we do achieve 100%. For program 2, Chair of National Health Insurance and Systems Improvement, for this program, we hope to achieve improved access to quality services, and mainly through universal health coverage, the reform of our health financing, as well as integrated training. And it is also a program that is responsible for monitoring, evaluation, and research, and it's led by the Chief Operating Officer, Dr. Andrew. And in this area, I would like to say, Chair, for this past financial year, we were supposed to finalize and publish the white paper, and it was released today. For the 15-17, we'd like to have it finalized with all comments incorporated, meaning at the moment there's been a request from different stakeholders for an extension of the comments involved. But we thought that it is important to go beyond just comments, but we also have a meeting informally and meeting with different stakeholders so that we clarify the content of the white paper. It's a major reform area for the country. And in that regard, Chair, for this financial year, we'll finish the white paper but also start the process of the first. Now, we have 6 work streams that have been established, and relative to those work streams, one of them has already started the work on the bill, so that by next year, at least, we can introduce the bill on national health insurance in Parliament. So if you look, the bill for NHI will be presented in 2017. Our hope is that it will be ready next year for presentation. The legislative process in government is quite elaborate. Before we even go to Parliament, first we must conduct a social economic impact analysis. We must present the bill to the four-part cluster, it must go through cabinet, we must get certification by the Department of Justice and so on. And based on that, we would like to, if possible, to have at least a good introduction in Parliament so that it can be part of the public hearing and so on. And we are hopeful that by 2017-18, we will have an act of Parliament. And parallel to that, Chair, we will not be able to start the process of creating the National Health Insurance Fund without the new act. Meaning we have to have the bill passed by Parliament, after which then we will have the fund created. Otherwise, there will not be a proper government relative to the fund. And our hope is that in 2017-18, we will have the fund created, because by 16-17 we have finished the bill, it will be introduced, and 17-18, in the towards the end of 17-18, if all goes well, we hope that there will be an NHI fund Chair, if you may be aware, we have the electronic stock management system that has been implemented in our process.
Electronic stock management system is currently deployed in 1,200 clinics. In addition to that, we also have deployed them in the central hospitals.
So that means with particular reference to the tertiary hospitals and regional hospitals?
So in terms of the tertiary regional, there's 10 tertiary hospitals, 17 regional, and 25 regional and 17 tertiary hospitals. So we have deployed electronic stock management.
So for this financial year, honorable members, we increase the number. So we can sort of share the report where the system has been implemented and how it's working and so on. And for the subsequent year, I think we'll also increase the number further. In our primary healthcare facilities, we've already mentioned that we've implemented in 1,200 facilities. So for this financial year, we've increased by another 600, meaning we have a total of 1,800 facilities. And for the subsequent year, it will be another 600 until we reach a target of about 3,000 facilities. And equally, the stock availability reporting, we have a system of surveillance for stock, for reporting stock availability. And at the moment, it's in these 10 central hospitals and in the clinic. And Chair, we also have what we call the Provincial Medical Procurement Unit, which promotes direct delivery. Meaning the companies do not have to send stock to the depot. Stock must be sent particularly to hospitals directly. So we started with Eastern Cape and Free State in the past financial year, and in this financial year it will be Northwestern Cape again. Western Cape already has a system like this and it's functional. So it is for these other provinces where we will be installing the facilities. And for patients that are getting their medicines directly from these facilities, you do not have to queue in clinics or hospitals. The doctor can give you the number. For this past financial year, how many?
Currently, 400,000 patients are queuing.
So our target is 500,000. So we reach the target of 400,000. But the 400,000 do not include Western Cape, because Western Cape interests a different system. And can you give the number for Western Cape?
Western Cape have approximately 200,000 patients that collect the medicines to this system.
So if we add the Western Cape number, of course it will be more than the 400,000. So we're very specific about this system. That's why we didn't necessarily include Western Cape. And the difference with Western Cape is that they've also included a community where they use a particular system. So we're going to look at whether we can, because it's also an opportunity for job creation. We will see whether we can use communities also for delivery. And for outer years, I think the number will increase to 850,000. The contract, we have improved our tendering process for contracts, but we are currently discussing with Treasury, because Treasury would like to centralize all tenders, particularly transversal tenders, so they will all be coordinated by Treasury in the financial year. For the AMR, you might have seen, honorable members, that yesterday it was reported that in 2 weeks, we now have two babies who died from the antimicrobial resistance related treatment. It's a serious problem. So we have a strategy, and we're working now on implementation. So it's a matter that we should consider an emergency in the country. Meaning antimicrobial resistance, if we do not have antibiotics that work, it's a serious problem. But I think for the surveillance systems that we have, the stewardship and some of the experts that we've appointed in different provinces. We do have a reasonable system in place, and we also have our surveillance system through the National Health Laboratory Services as well as the NIPT. With regard to traditional medicine, we are going to appoint a register. All the statutory bodies have a register, except for our traditional medicine. They do not have. So now we are going to have a register that will be appointed for traditional medicine. For revenue retention, we have a discussion paper. There are two models at the moment. A model that is implemented in Free State and a model that is implemented in the Western Cape. So we've met both so that we have a hybrid model, and we've been in consultation with the Financial and Fiscal Committee, and they are supporting, but we'll be working with Treasury, provincial Treasury, on how we can implement the model. I think it's mainly ensuring that the hospital can retain a certain amount of revenue that they can use, but they will not retain the full amount, but just the proportion. But as to what that proportion is, I think it's what we have to agree on with the provincial treasury, the national treasury. And the strategy of e-health, we made progress, honorable members. On this one, we have 700 facilities now that have systems that have been installed, but not all of them have connectivity. And I'd like to give over to the CEO to just say what progress.
Thanks, Izzy. With regards to the e-health strategy and the installation of the health patient registration system, in 2015-16, we had 117 computers delivered and installed in 110 primary healthcare facilities. And for 2016-17, we will have another 8,191 computers to be delivered. These are additional to what we did in the previous years. So that means that by the end of 2016-17, we will have 2,100 primary health care facilities that will be HPRS functional. And for 2015-16, we had 657, which were fully functioning on the health patient registration system. And so it's quite an improvement over last year, where we will be the end of this year because of the, what we've learned in the past and the fast scale-up that will happen now.
Okay, for the international treaties, for the past financial year, we had three international treaties implemented, and of these, one of them is the International Health Regulation, and the other one, honorable members, is the Tobacco one, where we have specifically, and I think the Tobacco one is not cool come to Parliament, because for any treaty that is adopted by any government, it must be tabled. And we ask for permission to present these to Parliament, including the International Health Organization. For the multilateral framework, I think this has to do with the World Health Organization chair. As you may recall, I was appointed to be the chair of the collective board, and the minister has been chairing the SOFT-TB partnership. And it's those agencies that we lead as a country in the world. And I think it has been quite an experience which is, I think, beneficial for the country. And for the bilateral, we have a bilateral, and the other one, Chair, is on the BRICS. We normally review, if honorable members of the we normally develop a declaration as the BRICS Minister of Health. We prepare declarations for them to adopt, and we can share these with honorable members from time to time, and they are adopted as a sideline of the World Health Assembly. The bilateral projects, five bilateral projects were implemented last year, and in this year we identified a bilateral agreement in the African region, but also outside the region.
Europe, some of the European countries. For instance, we finalized the one with China, and it will be included in the financial. With regard to the National Health Research Strategy, this was developed. At the moment, we are working on developing an observatory and having an observatory. We now have a database of all the research that is conducted in the country, and it is the basis on which we'll come up with an observatory. With regard to the monitoring, we're drafting currently the monitoring framework for NHS, and this will help us to see whether we're making progress with regard to NHS. For these specific areas are with regard to pharmaceuticals, honorable members. One is about the single exit price. We have to publish the pricing information on annual basis. The second one is about the uniform patient fee schedule. In the past, foreigners did not pay, even if they could afford. So we've come up with a new fee for foreigners, so that those who afford should pay. And I think it was not fair that you could have Babak and pay, but foreigners who afford not pay. So we've just finished that, so the regulations will be published soon by the minister. And secondly, we also have a repository of those patients that are on medical aid and those that are not, so that we can identify those that must be excluded from paying fees, because they need certain means tests that is conducted from time to time. And equally, we monitor the performance of suppliers, because there are some suppliers who don't have their contractual obligations. But we also prepare reports for those provinces that do not pay suppliers on time. And we set up a forum for members so that they can be a consultation. And this is part of our statutory obligations in terms of the National Health Act. And equally, we work with the provinces to develop the annual performance plan so that there's consistency between our reports and theirs. And finally, an integrated planning framework. This planning framework is not just between us and the provinces, it's also between us and other government departments that have impact on the rest of the country. For instance, Department of Sanitation, Water and Sanitation, because of outbreaks in the summer, we need to know whether it's a Department of Transport, we signed MOUs with a several Department of Justice, because of sexual and reproductive health. In fact, the report is out, honorable members, you can share it with me. We sent an MOU with the Department of Health as part of this integrated planning so that we plan and work together, as well as the education. This particular section deals with the patient complaints, patient safety concerns, and so on. As part of this, we've developed a survey tool. And this survey tool will be used to measure patient satisfaction in our facilities and use that as a basis of identifying areas that require improvement. So this is what we focus on in the past financial year. For this financial year, I think we'll be producing reports based on the survey that will be conducted. Under program three, this program is about HIV/AIDS, people, maternal and child health, and it's about developing policy guidelines, norms and standards. The implementation obviously is at provincial level, but we work in partnership with provinces to ensure that they can follow the policies and guidelines, norms, and standards. Particularly for pediatric and maternal health, as well as for the protective health for adolescents. So what we have here, honorable members, as part of reduction of maternal mortality, You'll notice that for 15-16, our estimated performance was 59%, and we increased that slightly for the subsequent year. For postnatal visits within 6 days, we also increased it to 35%, and maternal mortality ratio to 115. One would say, but I mean, how do you move from 117 to 115? I think the reality is that maternal mortality is something that is measured over a period. So it's not something that you can report on an annual basis. But we still want to keep the numbers at a particular level so that we reduce the number. I must say, honorable members, on maternal mortality, the best performing province at the moment is Western Cape, followed by Mpumalanga. So Mpumalanga has done extremely well in terms of its maternal mortality. I know that sometimes when you present there is a problem in Mpumalanga, on this one, and the COO should have mentioned, Mpumalanga is the only province that has installed the information systems and it has actually connected of all the facilities. So it's a huge improvement, and I think we need to look at so for program 3, for reduction of neonatal mortality rates, honorable members, neonatal mortality rate is also linked to maternal mortality. So if we improve on mortality, we'll also improve on neonatal mortality. And we put a target of 10 for this financial year. And for reproductive health, particularly popular protection rates and survival of cancer screening, this is what we're pushing. Popular protection rates is actually about contraception. It's to see whether our contraception programs and family planning are working very well. So we're hoping that most South Africans will not only use condoms but the implants and other measures of contraception. But the cervical screening is still continuing, and we're hoping in this financial year we'll increase it to 62%. PMTCT, honorable members, I must say that this is one area where we've not only done well, we continue to do well. In that, if you check in 2012, we're at 2.4, and we've achieved 1.4, and we'll sustain that. I think the aim is that we'll eventually reach zero. But that is not all. It's not a good story. You see, if you look at transmission rates, if you say you want to prevent it up to 10 years, yes, we can show very good survival, but it's not enough. What we want is at 24 months, we must have children that are full of HIV, but that survive. Meaning, HIV-free survival at 24 months. Meaning, they must not have died from diarrhea, they must not have died from malnutrition, they must be negative. Meaning, it must cover all aspects. So, what we want, actually, our target is to have HIV-free survival at 24 months. So, we just started at 18 months, and then we increase further to 24 months. Equally, like I said, we don't want children to have died from pneumonia or malnutrition or measles, for instance, because they were not vaccinated. They may be HIV negative, but then they died from other illnesses. So we want to look at the full scope of what is it that causes death among children. So immunization coverage, I must say that for this financial year, we'd like to reach 92% for children under 1, and again for breastfeeding, hopefully, exclusive breastfeeding. I always say, honorable member, it's a good target to reach, but a difficult one, especially for nursing mothers. Just to feed a baby breast milk is what we aspire for, and we'd like to encourage mothers to do this. And equally for measles, first dose dropout rate, we'd like this to go down, and hopefully we'll have fewer children who drop out and do not go to the measles coverage. The second dose, we want to increase this by 80% and to reach a target of 80%. For screening in school, grade 1 and grade 8, for grade 1, we want this to be 28% in this financial year, and for grade 8, so TB, and for the first dose, coverage of HPV, we'll start with HPV first to prevent cervical cancer. We start when children are young, so that when they are adults, they do not have cancer. So for first dose coverage, we'll have 87% in 16-17, and the second dose will have also 87%. TB, we're hoping that for those who are 5 years and older, they should be put on treatment. And again, for recumbent resistant, would like to initiate a treatment. And for this reason, for TB treatment, for this financial year, would like to reach a 94%, and the some person want to ensure that we've initiated treatment in 80% of the case. For success rate, I think we've shown a result for that. We want to maintain that, we'll keep it at 84%, and lots of follow-up. This is the area where if we can reduce those whom we lose that are on treatment, for instance, they don't come back for treatment again, and don't, you know, these information systems that the CEO referred to are the ones that are going to help us know exactly who doesn't come back to facilities for treatment. And for that reason, we want to keep the numbers low. If possible, keep it at not more than 5%. And equally, the client death rate of tuberculosis must also not be more than 5%. And for MDR TB, we want to make sure that lost follow-up rate is reduced. Equally, client death rate is reduced, and then treatment success rate is increased. So for these, for this financial year, our loss to follow up is still high, it's about 15%. I wish it could be even lower than that. For client death rate, it's at 15%. It has been going down over the years, and we hope that we'll keep it at that. It will even go further down to about 10%. And for MDR TB success rate, we still need to work even better. Because MDR TB is the key to improve it even further. And co-infection, I think we've seen improvements in that area. We're at 80%. I mean, at 79%, I think we can sustain that and even improve further, honorable members. Prevention to reduce transmission, the test is just ensuring that we test people. We're still at around 9 million. I mean, in 2014-15, we tested about 9.5 million. We want to maintain that so that about 10 million people are tested every year. And equally, medical circumcision, this is an area, honorable members, where we never get to 500,000. It's normally around 300,000 or more, or around that, precisely because people still do not follow the medical based circumcision. Mm-hmm. They do traditional circumcision. So when we count these numbers, we don't include the traditional circumcision. So we also don't want to cheat by including those numbers, mm-hmm. because when we say medical based circumcision, people come to facilities to do their circumcision. So we probably have to find a way of working with the the condoms, honorable members, we're hoping that for this financial year we'll have about 750 million condoms distributed and 7.5 female condoms. Our numbers are at 3.6 of people who are on treatment. We're hoping to increase that. We'll put even a higher target of 4.3 million. It's quite high and a little bit ambitious, but I think it's important because we see that it reduces transmission rates, but it also contributes towards protection of mother-to-child transmission. So we've set up some system of reporting for prognosis. The reason we did that is because we want to come up, like we don't have to wait for the end of the financial year to know whether the problem is solved or not. It's our, we come up with the monitoring tools and measures for each area, for maternal and child health, HIV, so that we can come up with remedial plans in between for different systems. For instance, if you look at the province, it's not every district in a province. province that underperforms. It is certain districts within the province. So we would like to focus on those districts that are struggling so that we can use that as a basis of intervention. So at the moment, in the past, honorable members, we just looked at the report of the province. So now we've gone further to say, out of so many districts in the province, which ones are struggling, even subdivisions, and we're using that as a basis of intervening. And I think we'll do that for several areas. We've come up with a cervical cancer and breast cancer policies and plans. And the National Health Council has just recently approved this in the financial year in 2015-16. So our focus for 16-17 is the training of health workers in the implementation of these policies, both for cervical and breast cancer. But in addition, we've also come up with a cancer policy for the rest of the other cancers. We have singled out honorable members, cervical and breast cancer, because it's a women's health issue, and we want to give special attention to it. For this financial year, each district has to come up with their district plan, and we're monitoring this to ensure that they can report. Like I said, we've come up with what I call a dashboard and district plan, so that we can monitor all of this. And we bring these also to the conditional grants, so that the reporting on conditional grants can be rigorous, and we can bring these on quarterly basis to the honorable members. Now, we will no longer just report on a province, we will also give you a breakdown about which district performs, which district underperforms. And we will do the same even for women's health, for HIV/AIDS, for tuberculosis, for specific areas that fall under this program. Our National Antinatal Sentinel HIV and Syphilis Prevalence Report published annually, and I think it's an indicator of whether we're doing well or not. We use that to monitor whether we're making a difference on HIV/AIDS or not. And equally for child health programs, we'll also use the same measures for the same. Honorable members, we started a TB program in correctional services as well as in mines. And we are screening women, but we're also screening mine makers to get the benefit of HIV. As you know, areas where there's overcrowding, the spread of TB is a disaster. So as part of that, not only screen but also push them in put on treatment time. And for this past financial year, I think our targets were 75% for the women and 50% for the men. Then increased the target for the subsequent month. For primary health care, the program for the people is to develop and oversee implementation of legislation, quality systems, norms and standards, but ensure also we have a functional district health system, environmental health services, communicable diseases, non-communicable diseases, health promotion and nutrition. And for this, the first one is prevention of blindness. Mm-hmm. In this area, we perform cataracts, honorable members. Mm-hmm. We had targeted ourselves that we perform 64,800 cataracts. And it's clear we didn't meet this target. We met a target of around 44,000. This is where we've been realistic. We put it ahead because this is the capacity we have for the cataract. And these are the annual kind of cataract operations that we perform. We'd like to eliminate malaria. And we're one of the few countries that have been identified for malaria elimination. KZN is doing very well. Mpumalanga is doing well. Our problem at the moment is in Limpopo and also in the Kikuyu area. And you still need to understand why in that area are we facing malaria cases, more cases in that area. But we've seen a sort of an improvement in the two provinces. government, we'd like to have a uniform structure, honorable members, for the district health. We've come up with that uniform structure. We've been in consultation with the provinces. The concerns that have been raised, which I'd like to share with you, are that the structure looks good on paper, but it's costly. And our view is that as with equal to implement NHI, we need to invest in our districts, and we need to ensure that those structures, the uniform structure is adopted. We're also in consultation with the Department of Public Service Administration so that we can, in this financial year, we can implement the structure. But we also want to ensure that we have committees, you know, the healing committees in every clinic are functional. And we have put a target. As part of the ideal clinic, I must say that we have about 500, not 1,000, that have functional clinic. And ward-based primary healthcare outreach teams, we have 2,000 functional teams, not individual members. Now each team has 10 members. So it means it's actually a total of 20,000 honorable members. Now remember, we've got 4,000 wards that we targeted. And we said per ward we have a team of 10. But we've also recognized that even if you have 4,000 wards with a team of 10, it's not every ward that or every household that will need support. We have now done an analysis of which household needs it. And we finished that work, and we did a business case so that we can invest in appointing more community health workers. Because our view is that if we have a certain number of teams of people who go to households to pick up all the problems, are we able to prevent and promote health? We don't have to wait for people to come to facilities when they're already. We have to intervene in their homes. So for the primary health care facilities that qualify as ideal clinics, like I said, it's 500, and these are the ones that have a functional committee. But our target, like I said, was 1,000. Municipalities that are audited against the norms, the environmental health norms, we are targeted 20 and they are 35. But we recognize that their capacity constraints in some of the municipalities, they will not be able to reach this target of meeting these norms. But it's an important public health issue, and we'd like to work in partnership with them and support them so that they can reach these targets. The IT strategy has been developed and adopted, and we're going to start a campaign, honorable members, so that hand washing is it's a norm for everyone. Before we shake hands, before we eat in hospitals, before doctors touch patients, they must have washed their hands. Before nurses touch patients, before people cook, after taking diapers or babies, people are boiling. Meaning it must just be standard that everybody washes hands. So we'd like to Parliament to join us in this campaign of washing hands.
Mm-hmm.
It's important for two reasons. The first reason is that it prevents infection, it prevents the spread of disease, but it also prevents people using antibiotics. Because once you have an illness, you have to be put on antibiotics, it leads to more resistance.
Mm-hmm.
So just hand washing, it can really improve health.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd like to join hands yourself in prison. The risk waste regulations, we are hoping that this can also be implemented, they were approved, and we're going to be working with the provinces to ensure that they all have the waste management plan. Chair, the international health regulations, I'm glad to say that our port health system has been fully transformed, and because South Africa has to implement international health regulations, all 44 points of entry must be compliant. And I'm pleased to say that this is one of the countries that are compliant. But compliance is not one of, we must maintain that all the time. The biggest area of improvement that is needed is regulation of nuclear materials, radioactive materials, and chemicals. I think those are the two areas that South Africa has to invest in. With regard to healthy meal provision, honorable members, we are going to be serious about what gets eaten in school, in our meetings, in government departments, in parliament. We are going to be prescribing the meals. So we are going to send out guides for healthy meal provision in the workplace so that we all comply and we all eat healthy options and healthy meals. So we'd also like you to join us in this campaign to promote healthy
lifestyles.
Thank you. We'll also do it for the childhood development centers so that the babies, as they grow in their pressure in the garden, they also for a particular meal and we're hoping that we work in partnership with other government departments. Like I said, the tobacco is for the regulation, but we also have a drug tobacco product bill which must be submitted to cabinet. It is already available in draft, but it must be presented to cabinet. We will be monitoring salt. As you know, our salt regulations came into force. Industry had asked for an extension until 2016, and now they have to be compliant. So we have to now go and sample food to check whether the food has the salt that is regulated and do not exceed the limits that have been established. And we will be presenting these reports on a regular basis. We finished developing the operating framework for National Health Commission, and we are hoping that the commission will be established in this financial year. This the minister will confirm in due course. The mental health team, we've developed the strategy for mental health. It was approved, and the minister has also established the mental health advisory group. But we'd like more teams because mental health is a key concern in South Africa. So we've targeted 5 district teams, and we'll increase these teams as we go along and ensure that every province has some teams that give special attention and focus to mental health. We also finished, honorable members, a strategic framework for disability and rehabilitation. So in this financial year, we will be implementing and ensure that every province has a plan in place to implement the strategy. And this is just to make sure that there are assistive devices for those with disabilities, and the services are friendly to them, but also that they can also get rehabilitation when necessary, and they can also get appropriate services, whether we've got specific professionals like occupational health and professionals, and we can run that process. In this regard, we've actually met where these occupational health professionals are and whether we can contract and work with them to render services for those who need them. A chair for malaria, like I said, for elimination of malaria, 7 of 9 targeted districts must report within 24 hours. So far, it's only 5. Like I said, the one that is of concern to us is important. It's a big concern to us. But we also looking at outbreaks. Response teams, they've been trained, and it's quite important that everybody gets trained. You might have seen that in the paper there was a rat that was shown to have a plague. And we follow up on those because we don't want any outbreaks. For instance, in Congo, in Angola, we've got a lot of cases of yellow fever. And the where are we performing and where are we not performing and what is the action to do. What took longer, honorable members, is the development of the curriculum and the training, the modeling approach. But other areas, like the chief nursing officer has been appointed, and we've come up with a resignation to the nursing council. We just have to agree, and we could not finalize the resignation because we had to agree on the education point. And for the infrastructure, honorable members, we have put a target of 198 facilities for this financial year. I must say that at this stage, and this is mainly for repairs and refurbishment. Now, for those NHI, we actually separated between those that were in the NHI district and those that were not in the NHI district. In total, those that were not in the NHI district are 310. And for community health centers, 35, and hospitals, those that had to be constructed too, and also compliance with numbers. The numbers standards are mainly for facilities that have to be newly established. If you notice, it is actually 35.2. This is where the 67 comes from. So for this financial year, we increase the numbers slightly. And honorable members, I do not want to give you the status report from my head. I think it's only fair to just send you a report on where we are with each of the areas where we have to target. When we're going to construct, refurbish, or build, And the monitoring, we've actually developed a system to monitor specifically the performance, meaning it should be easy. I shouldn't have to come back and report. You should be able to get the report timely on whether the facilities have been constructed, have been maintained, refurbished. So this system has just been developed and tabled. So we will be implementing it in the 16th, and it's going to be implemented based actually on a balance scorecard and methodology. And we just have one consolidated report whereby we can say in which province, in which district, which facilities have been maintained, which ones have been established, and so on. And Chair, the other area is on EMS regulations. These regulations were published, gazetted, approved by the minister. Now, every province presents a report on the status of their emergency medical services. They report on the number of ambulances they have, they report on the number of personnel they have, even their level of training. If you recall, honorable members, we used to have basic ambulance attendants. They have to be retrained in line with the new regulations. But one of the other areas that we highlighted in the regulations was that you must have one standard color of an ambulance, you must have one number, but you must also make ambulances a provincial competence because of the boundaries. What happens is that when they are under the jurisdiction of the municipality, if you have a patient nearby in a different boundary, the ambulance doesn't fetch them. And it's a problem. So if they're under a provincial control, then they can move and control and monitor and make decisions from them. So this is in the regulations, but obviously what is needed is that we need to now engage municipalities and explain that this is a provincial competence. With regard to the left, honorable members, I think there's been significant improvement on blood alcohol and food tests. The area that is really, really a challenge is toxicology. The blood alcohol was actually significantly improved. We got new machines, employing additional staff. We even opened another lab in case of end. Meaning if the person just has a lab in Western Cape, how can we have two, one in Pretoria and Johannesburg? So we've just opened a fourth lab in case of end. So with regard to managers, we now have the academy. The framework has been approved by NHC. We've developed a hub for coaching and mentoring. In this financial year, honorable members, we'll now be coaching and mentoring 40 hospital CPOs and 200 PhD facility managers. We've recognized that to workshop people is not enough. They go for training. What they need is ongoing monitoring and support. So because this is the only way we can support them and they can perform in the different facilities. We've also developed a knowledge hub that they can access on an ongoing basis, meaning they can also communicate with their peers and share problems and support each other, in addition to the monitoring and coaching that we're going to be providing them. So these are the numbers. We've developed these systems. We've also come up with a framework. We're now going to have an academy, honorable members, for them. And in addition, we'll also provide these kinds of services. The education and training of EMS personnel. We actually had a presentation by the college. They need about 630 million to retrain some of the personnel to be at a certain level. We really need to do this. It's important. You don't want to be first in an ambulance and you only have the ambulance support personnel who cannot resuscitate you, who cannot put a drip on you. So we have to up the skills of our EMS personnel. So for this financial year, the budget that is needed is about 650 million, and because of the constraints, the budgetary constraints, our budget has been cut. We could not allocate for this financial year, so obviously we have to allocate for the next financial year. We also come up with regulations for emergency care centers. These are out for comment, as well as those for mass gatherings. Now for mass gatherings, I know that normally our focus has been for events like the World Cup.
Mm.
But in South Africa, we also have other mass gatherings, like churches.
Mm.
You know, in Moria, for instance, it's a big mass gathering. In KZN, Shembe, it's a big mass gathering. So we must just provide support when there are those services, whether it's emergency services, ensure that there's clean water, we've got access to sanitation. I mean, there are standards that must be complied with. Must be provided for this person. We also have regulations for forensic pathology services. They've been published for comment. We hope that in this financial year they will be implemented. The scope of practice for forensic pathology services, again, will be for implementation, meaning we published all of these. This year we will be implementing. We've got them published, we've received comments, integrated comments. The next one, honorable member, is to monitor services for management of sexual and related offences. We're working closely with the Department of Justice. Actually, we've signed an agreement with them that will also produce an annual report with them. We've established five regional training centers. There were four outstanding in four other provinces. So in this financial year, we'll be establishing them in the four remaining provinces. The last one here is the health regulation and compliance, and this is about regulating sales of medicines and pharmaceuticals, food, trade in health products and health technology. So, honorable members, I want to take this opportunity to thank you for approving SAPRA and for this process. It's one law that has taken forever to be amended. And now we have a consolidated piece of legislation. And we are now in the process of appointing the board and having this listed, we are waiting for the approval of the Minister of Finance and Public Service Administration to list this as a public entity so that we can appoint the board and then the board can appoint the CEO. But I just wanted to say this is this committee through the public hearings and also final approval that we have this year. So in this financial year, we'll be working towards establishing the governance structure and the transfer of personnel so that in the next financial year, it can be operational and functional. For occupational health, we'd like to have an integrated management of CCO, PMG, and MBU. For NIOH, is only certain areas, but not all functions. Some of the functions, particularly for the toxicology, will remain with but as part of that, we're going to come up with a piece of legislation, honorable member. It went out for public comment. It is the National Public Health Institute of South Africa for disease and injury prevention. It's gone out for public comment. It will be, hopefully, if all goes well, it will be tabled in Parliament. So in this financial year, we're still hoping that it will come via the committee because it is an area of significance. And this institute is the one that is supposed to ensure that we do not have outbreaks. Emergency operation center, we can monitor what happens not only for Ebola and other diseases in India. And with regard to the statutory body, the National Health Act actually requires that we have a forum of statutory bodies and we monitor their governance, their performance, and for that reason we actually look at their structure, finance, HR, supply chain policies, whether they are in place, and this is the
upon the forum. We've established this forum so that the different statutory health councils can engage with each other, particularly on cross-cutting matters. So the Health Professions Council, Nursing Council, Pharmacy Council, the Allied Health Professions Council, the Dental Technicians Council are represented. So for example, there are issues where nurses issue a prescription and pharmacists must dispense the prescription. And so there are tensions between professions about whether that's allowed and whether the legislation allows it, etc. So at the forum we're able to resolve some of those matters. So I think it's a useful forum for us to resolve some of these interprofessional jurisdiction issues.
But the other important one is that the people who get appointed to the board, some of them don't attend meetings. Like, for instance, a board may not meet because they don't come in for us. Or sometimes they do attend, but they don't participate. They attend, they sit there, say nothing throughout the meetings. They attend every meeting, but they don't participate, they don't say anything. So one of the things that we're trying to do is to look at the performance management system for board members. So that the chair can see whether people have attended a meeting, whether they participate, whether they produce reports, and so on. So that we can ensure that those people who serve on board can also perform. So the system will be implemented in this financial year. I think it has been developed. So for the appointed, for the new appointees, so that we are also not unfair, we appoint people if we want them to perform. We've come up with a sort of an induction program because most of these boards have to comply with King's 3. And we want to ensure that those tools are in place for them to be inducted and trained. And we'll also have a dashboard to monitor their performance. And sort of, now, if you read all our pieces of legislation, they actually make a provision for some of the statutory bodies actually. The MEC is there to appoint people who serve on those boards or on those councils. What we would like to have is that there must be a template whereby they report to the MEC what is it that they seem to be in the board, and equally for those who serve on behalf of the minister. So the honourable member said, the EPP, for the finances, I just wanted to say that this is the allocation letter which identifies the area where there's been baseline increases and where there's been cuts. And I just want to say that the baseline reductions are particularly in those particular areas, if you notice even in the conditional grants. But there are areas where there are also functional shifts in the department. So I just want the CFO to from here the summary.
Okay, while you see it's getting on here, let me take this opportunity to welcome Honorable Mashuti. Short. You are welcome. We were informed earlier that you would be joining us, and I've been told that you've been to this committee during the previous term. There is a lot that we're going to learn from you. But I also think that there's a lot that we're going to learn from the committee members. You are welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jane. Yes, I'll just refer, as we just showed the allocation letter, significantly there's been some increases in baseline, but as you said, that those baseline increases were basically taken back by National Treasury. And just for the next financial year, there's been a drop of about 380 million in totality in our baseline number. Significantly, as you said, as those come from conditional grants, you will then see that the one reduction, for instance, would have been on the health revive grant, the indirect portion of 160 million. We've also had to contribute a number of savings, bringing minute goods and services. The one that worries us in particular is the RTA, 17, 18, 19, especially where there is compensation of employee reduction, 45 and 71 million over these two periods. And we have to discount this in terms of our operational expenditure and goods and services as well. To provinces, the effect has been big as well. There's been a reduction on the HIV program of 176 million and 14 million for the first 2 years, and then the business case that was made even HIV is a big increase. But having said that, we've now learned that these allocations are not guaranteed anymore. In the past, there was some certainty about allocations, but we do find that very late in the financial year, as late as middle January, we do get further cuts. Second portion that was cut back was on the revive grants to provinces, another 200 million. And this is why DGI said that many of the efforts now would be on maintenance, and not so much on new establishment of new facilities. We've had a function shift back to education for the intake of medical students, and these funds have come straight from bottom line as well, from baseline. We had to find the funds within. So if you combine that reduction plus the 20 million plus the other reduction compensation, we really had some big cuts in this financial year. On this page of the allocation letter, apart from the earmark fund, and let me say with earmark funds, it's also difficult because these funds are specifically appropriated, so there's no way we can move it, you know, for other programs that we'd like. And if we want to do that, we have to go through a process with National Treasury. So we kind of see this as a conditional grant in the small, because it comes with quite a bit of conditions. The one aspect that has changed from our allocation of last financial year is that the indirect grants, they have now all been grouped under the National Health Insurance Grant. So if you recall, last year we had the Levi grant separate, the contracting grant separate, etc. They're all now under one umbrella. But they all still stay Schedule 6A grants. So they're still in-kind grants, and we still spend these funds on behalf of provinces. The two additional components is the information system component, which was only kicking in the 17-18 year. But we've now also got an ideal clinic component, 10 and 13 and 15 million. And these funds were basically moved from the infrastructure grant to create and fund this new Ignite grant to provinces. Jane, and just I'll run through this quite quickly because this is all captured in the details. But year on year, 1.75% increase on budget. This is the increase by program. If you look at the economic education, that's a bit more in most countries, it's the issue of compensation. There was a 13% increase in compensation, mainly because of the move from portal services from provinces into us. But you will then see that those gains are eroded in the outer year, and there's only a 0.56% increase in our budget. Which just takes me back to this point, sorry for that. It's just to say that in the allocation letter as well, Treasury has now put a ceiling to our compensation of employees. So you will see that the growth, 873 to 878 over the 2 years, is that 0.56% that I mentioned. So we in the past had certainty about 5.6% or 6.3% on compensation. That's no longer there. So we'd have to find a way of managing our compensation quite innovatively going forward. The goods and services reduction I spoke about, as well as the reduction in capital expenditure. This slide just confirms what I've told you now. Under Program 1 administration, you will see that there's a total increase of 1.4% from the baseline of 2015-16. Again, a reduction of goods and services, and especially on capital services. And if you look at the explanations, you'll see that we've had some increase in terms of office accommodation for port health services. We've got about 4 or 5 new lease agreements that we have to service in this area. The transfer of the public sector CETA payments came in last financial year, and we had included this over the E&E. That's reason for the increase. And then there's also the once-off $3 million allocated in 2016 for the upgrading of the security systems that CETAs won't carry through in the new financial year. Program 2 has had a total reduction of 4.7% from baseline. Mainly, you'll see it on the NHI portion, a 9% there, and that's because of a reduction, as I explained to you, on the indirect grant from the National Treasury. And that impacts directly then on our goods and services reduction. But there's a significant increase in capital, and I'll explain to you now the increase in that. Just to also explain or show the impacts of earmarked funds in terms of what we've got absolute control over versus what we haven't got control over. If you look at Program 2, for instance, of that budget, 385 is earmarked funding, and only 174 is within the voted funds arena. So we've got little control over the earmarked funds, and if we underspend there, then we need to make a case to our Treasury to defray any other expenditure for over expenditure on the voted funds. So just to give you the analysis, there will be an additional 76 and 200 million over the period for the patient information system. We've got a once-off allocation for the SA Demographic Health Survey, additional funds for the medical medicine stock system, which Anman has spoken about. The NHI was reduced by 10 million on the DRG project, but mostly that was moved into the NHI conditional grant as a transfer to Western Cape. And this will be treated as a transfer payment. The capital assets, you will see that there was quite a big increase in capital asset budget, but it was essentially a function shift. We moved some funds from goods and services into assets for the purchases of equipment and additional assistance to provinces. Now, this other significant issue as well, which is part of our contribution to the savings with Treasury, is that the direct grants would have come to an end of this financial year. So there won't be any direct grant allocations for NHI to provinces anymore. It would all be housed under the indirect grant policy. Program 3, a total increase of 10% on baseline. Again, capital has got a huge increase, I'll speak to it now. Goods service is very small, and most of our earmarked fund lies within the goods and services amounts. Again, earmarked fund, because of the conditional grant to provinces, there's a 15.2 billion earmarked funds that will get provinces, and we've got some earmarked funds for condoms, for instance, and also the HDB vaccine grants. Chair, this grant would have come to an end this financial year. Yeah. We negotiated with Treasury that this grant stays with us up to the end of 2017-18, and by then it would have been taken up or should be taken up within the equitable share portion of provinces. But those mechanisms, I think, we still have to discuss and work around. We obviously, the minister is obviously very keen to have this grant remain with us as national, so we'll negotiate that with our pleasure. As I said, there was additional funds over the MTED for the HIV, the TB and HIV study cases. The cuts that impacted on goods and services and compensation for us. The assets, the increase in the budget of assets was as a result of, again, a function shift from 15 million from the indirect grant into assets. So although the grant would still remain in total at 200 million, the allocation portion would now be slightly different, and some money would have been moved into the capital expenditure. Program 4 has got a 14% increase. It looks a lot, but there are some function shifts again from other programs in and some other out, and I'll talk to them now. In total, you see that they've taken a bit of a knock in terms of the goods and services budgets, but the increase in compensation is as a result of the port health services that we included in this program. They've only got one earmarked allocation, which is the idle clinic generic grant of 10 million and 30 and 50 over the MTF period. But just to come to the analysis again, there is a 90 million allocation over the MTF for the idle clinic product. Funds would be prioritized to cater for environmental health and port health services, and this has also brought some pressure on us. Although we did get funds from provinces, we now have to establish a new system and a new structure. And because port health was a very small portion of the budget and revenue of provinces, it wasn't given all that attention, all the attention it deserves. With us now, the revenue, although small, is still a big revenue portion for us, but it becomes material to our finances. Putting in some effort to collect all of that. There was two shifts. The oral health was shifted from non-communicable diseases, and that's the decrease in that budget allocation. And epidemiology and surveillance was shifted from program 2 into communicable diseases, and that's the number for that increase. Program 5, 2.2% increase on baseline. Same trend there. Goods and services reduced together with capital expenditure. They do have quite significant amounts earmarked. Significantly, they would have the in-kind revive grant. They would have the normal revive grant that goes to provinces. They would also have the tertiary services together with the health professional training grant. So the forensic chemistry laboratory, those amounts we created to keep them earmarked over the financial year, purely because we want to make sure that we spend on equipment and increasing the capacity of the laboratory, especially the new one that's included in. As I said, we also had some reprioritization for the Office of Nursing Services, the one that DG mentioned. And we believe that is now fully capacitated, or should be, in terms of funding for now. Spoke about the laboratory in KZN. Significant shifts also to education for the intake of medical students over the MTF period. But there are some carry through costs that we have to meet in terms of this project, which might bring a bit of a challenge for us in terms of the funding of that. And then the normal cuts in compensation and with the services program 6. 5% increase from baseline. This has been pretty consistent. They've got increase in compensation, reduction on goods and services, as most of them, and small increases on capital and transfers. You would then also see that our transfers to NHLS, MRC, the office and CCID remained under this program, as well as to the pharmaceutical trade. Possible trade regulations. We did allocate an additional funds to MRC over the period for studies that are on our behalf. And obviously, there's been a small increase in decreases that all programs have been affected on compensation and goods and services.
Thank you.
and I think conclusion, our annual performance plan for 2017-2018 is actually based on the national development plan, and we by the intervention we think we can improve health outcomes and we can improve the performance of the health system. As part of the universal health coverage, we're hoping that the national health insurance process of positive development, legislation and so on is going to be a game changer for health in the country. Thank you, Honorable.
Thank you very much, Chair. PG and the team for a detailed presentation. Honourable members, I will then come back to you. As we know that this is a very important exercise that we're doing in terms of the oversight or the monitoring of the work that will be done by the department. It will be based on this, not just another meeting or another briefing. It's important that we engage with this document with that in mind, that when they come back and report DG, expect last time that we're not going to look at other things outside other than what you're presenting today. We'll be looking at this to say how far have you gone in terms of the implementation. It shouldn't be difficult because it's what we are presenting to us. For a minute, Honourable Founders Bukwane, Honourable Paula, Honourable Stock, Honourable Samson, Honourable Hartner, fine. And that's all the Honourable members.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, to you, DG, on behalf of us, I just want to congratulate you on your new appointment and wish you best of luck. My second compliment, Chairperson, go on the departmental achievements that have been outlined. DG, our state of readiness for the Zika in terms of how far, I know you have some things that have been prepared in terms of how you tackle it, but some detailed information may be in writing for us per province. You mentioned earlier on about the circumcision and the traditional leaders and the cultural practices that we need. I think more, and this is my personal view, more of awareness campaigns in terms of radio, in terms of, I know our people are not all internet inclined, but maybe some form of communication in their own languages as pamphlets and sessions and information tables or centers that's where they can get the information to fight this. Could I also ask DG if you could give detailed information on the training for the civic health workers, the outline and the criteria that you'll be following on selecting those health workers per province. Chairperson, the last time we visited the Lindela Repatriation Center in Rustenburg, the clinic in there with all the patients who are HIV positive, I want to know, because we had mentioned this to the health department, something should be done. How far are you with those endeavors in terms of responding to the needs of the clinic, in terms of space, in terms of the inmates in the Lindela Repatriation Center? In our last visit, DG, to the Eastern Cape, there has been a desperate need for the building of the missionary hospital, the Nesonite hospital. Nothing has been said about it in terms of your provincial, yourself together with the provincial department on how far and what are the time frames in terms of erecting that hospital, which we heard that there are plans in place. Nothing has been said about that, and maybe your budget does not accommodate that because nothing has been said. That's what I'm assuming. Maybe there is something on the pipeline. Your initiatives, Dr. Masasa, in terms of the healthy food that's going to be instructed to Parliament is a very good initiative. My suggestion is that can you also extend your efforts to the Department of Basic Education so that it does not only start with the early childhood development, but it succeeds or goes through the Department of Basic Education. And I'm sure in if we could follow that, we'll see less of the diabetes in due course, less of the high blood pressure. And I know for a fact in most of the schools in the Western Cape, there are prepared meals and no strips or chips are being sold in tuck shops. That's a good initiative if you're starting it with the Department of Basic Education. There's a shortage of nurses, and this is not only a province challenge. It's happening in all provinces, and we're seeing more of the nurses still going to Saudi Arabia and all that. And I know we've got those challenges. We've seen the recent strikes of nurses. I can't remember the province. And that, yes. If you could just tell us your efforts in trying to respond to those demands of the nurses and trying to tantalize them rather into staying. Which also brings me to the question of the doctors who have been retained, who are on training in China. I think they failed or they were counted as not being effective academically on their studies, and they were sent to the province. I would like to know how many have been taken from the Western Cape, or was it a selection of certain provinces? The cervical cancer you spoke about, DG. I've got a family member that's affected, an 82-year-old in my family. And apparently we are told that it can be taken up because of the age and all that. And if you can maybe if I could just outline some questions directly to you and then you can give them as per email because it's more of my mom-in-law who's affected. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's about it. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable
Paola? Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. And thanks, TG, for the presentation. May I just teach you a big friend?
Mm-hmm.
Spadanta in the airplane.
Yeah,
from any side. Every year. Every year. Progress reports on your pilot flights, and now this year, TG, I don't know if I heard you correctly, you are telling us that your funding in respect of the NHI has been cut down. But we have not seen the results of the pilot flights. That is my problem with South Africa. There are too many pilots which end up being pilots. You see, when you pilot because you want to move to the next level of extending whatever you've been piloting to the whole country. We pilot and pilot and go back. Reports on these pilots. When are we going to see it getting to all the districts in South Africa? Because we are piloting so that we can correct the wrongs, take the good to implement to all the districts in the country. Secondly, Chairperson, there was an issue the same issue about the model clinic. Are we getting to where we wanted to be, to change the structure of this model clinic thing? Because I would like to see this model clinic also in the areas where I come from. Because I haven't seen them. I spoke at length last time about these issues and the monitoring on the ground as to whether what you are telling us is happening on the ground. Thirdly, Chairperson, the standardization of the EMS. Last year, the department was telling us the same thing. When is this going to happen? We had the same issue last year. We are hearing the same idea again this year. When is implementation? On slide 52, we are talking about regulating mass gathering. And we shall over the norms of politics. We shall over. What is the definition of a mass gathering? You see, the areas where you come from, there are also weddings, traditional weddings, we get people together. And if you watch our perfect wedding on TV, some of those are mass gathering. What is going to happen? Is the government that is going to provide a free service? I'll be very happy because we pay for these services, drink, ambulances, so our gatherings and stuff like that. Or are you going to now say people must pay for the services, but it's a rule that there must be this service when you bring people together? Because if that is the case, how are you going to regulate and monitor this? We gather people, sports fields, especially during these big holidays, Ramaphosa, you get so many people. What is the definition and what type of a mass gathering are we talking about? I appreciate the reason of my government's that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Father Stock.
Thank you. Honorable Chairperson, I was actually covered one question which I wanted to pose to the government. I think my colleague has actually covered me in that regard. But firstly, DG, I just wanted to establish or get a clarity from you. In your presentation, you spoke about the baseline, the reduction of the baseline targets. So I'm not sure whether we are speaking about the same thing as the departmental targets, or what is it all about? Or is it the same thing, or those are two different things? And if they are two different things, if there's a different meaning for the departmental target and the reduction of the baseline, and I want to pose a question to you regarding the reduction of your departmental targets. I've noted that most of them, for almost all the programs, from program 1 up to 6, there's a significant reduction of those targets. Can you maybe share with us what actually happened there, or what motivated it to happen? Apart from the issue, DG, that it might be Treasury that actually reduced the target. But for our own purposes of committee, I think we'll be more interested to know what made it to reduce like that. And the second thing, last year we had an opportunity where we were the committee invited MSCs from different provinces. And one of the engagements that we had an intention with the NEC then of health in the Northern Cape. And then one of the questions that was posed, I remember, DG, or the concern for us as a committee was around the issue of the state of the mental hospital. I'm sure most of you are familiar about the project of the hospital. So I would like to know, maybe from your side, is there any progress that has been made? Are we getting somewhere with that hospital and all of that? Or what is it that we are doing to assist the province in that regard? Thank you.
Hey, Samka.
Yeah,
and go see Chairperson on the train network about who ended up at the Slumon department. Mugusoloko, who did she ever in that? A situation, this is what I said, they need to be a set. As Halo, Yahalela Ukwazi, into it from the department. The research council, the Bonne in other persons of time, Bravo, the Oba, Eastern Cape, Yona area, and Chapazalora, the two also, the cancer in Ghana. I department yenza ntoni ukuzama ukuhlawula la area. Ingaba ikhona i-awareness eyenziwa i-department to assist aba bantu more special in the area of bambisana in Lusikisiki or Fort St. John. Sikhona into eyenzekayo phaya ukwenza i-awareness. Mhlawumbi le nto ethi yenziwa yintoni i-cancer yenkanga. Because ebunyanisweni sesona sisenkozi into okokuba si ngenezulu kwelakala. Ujeju, a former deputy president, Ukhali, His Excellency Ukhali Mamashante, unesibhedlela besigulu phase esimayini lakhaya. Ingaba siyasebenza. Singabe siwafumana amanani a-DG athi abantu abangenayo phaa mhlawumbi ngenyanga bangakanani. Khona into eqhubekayo eyenzekayo also nento ukongeza phaa kumama usiphama ureze iquestion yasesisule nkama nesis esule nkama inkumbu isibhedlela besizawakhiwa sesikwi-stage apha also nebambisana hospital yenye isibhedlela likwi-process entoyoba izawugqikezelwa izawuqaliswa ukwakhiwa kwenzeka ntoni ngoku kwezo zibhedlela i-provincial aid council sinazo ukuba zinazo ziyasebenza i-department national department yenza ntoni uqinisekisini uba i-provincial department ziyazimonitarisha because singanazo i-provincial aid council kodwa zingasebenzi senza ntoni uqinisekisa into yoba ziyamonitarishwa yaye ziyayincedisa idepartment ekubeni kwizinto ezizi-challenges more especially kube ndine-aids uyahlangatyezwana nazo. I think chair ezinye ii-questions zam sezikhavarishiwe koqa bam.
Thank you very much all members. From my side, DG, let me also start by congratulating you again because I think this is another, is in addition to your participation at global level. It says a lot about the country and we are quite aware that you're not only representing yourself, even though you are the only one who's working with that, you're representing all of us. We want to say we are very much proud of you and of the department of the country. You do have our support and we hope that you are going to represent us very well there. And it says a lot about the image and capacity of the country. It leads me to the issue of our communication with the department. I have a message not only to be even previously on what the department is doing. It's not communicated out there. Do you have a communication? I'm not sure whether I'm asking you this for the second time. Do you have a communication unit in the department? If yes, what are they doing? What are they doing? Why don't we hear about these things? It's only these few members who will know that you're participating at that level, which is a big thing for the country. But if you had a very good communication unit in the department, this could have been known by the country. It means you have to up the strengthen the communication section on everything that you do as a department. The issue of the NHI is taking too long. as though I do understand, because we don't want to make a mistake like you're saying. We don't want that when we say that we're done and finished, then we're taken to court again, restart the wheel again. So I do appreciate the pace that you're taking, but I must say that on behalf of the people we're selling to, because it is going to benefit our ordinary people there, people who cannot afford to have medical aid. So there is a need of fasting the pace of fast tracking the pace of this problem. The issue of the other matter has been covered by Honorable Stoke and the other one by Honorable Thomas Luban. Honorable Stoke, in the sense of the hospital that has been built up, we were told last year, for the past 11 years. No. It can't be, DJ. I know that some of the things are done by provinces, but it can't be. Government can't be keep on pumping money on one the same project, and we seem to be quiet about it, and it seems like things are normal. We have taken a decision as a committee that we are going to visit that hospital, together with the new one that we have built as part of our oversight, so that we have an insight on what is happening. But we do want you to take interest in that as a department, to see how best to finalize that hospital so that people can benefit on it. The other issue is the one of Elindelani. We raised it with you when you came to report last time, to say go and look at that health facility. It's not healthy at all. See how best you can assist me. The department raised it to Department of Home Affairs. They are waiting for you to come on board and see how best you assist. It's a question of getting an appropriate area, because it's a small area and people are congested today. Condom distribution, the significance of condoms that are used by elderly people, not for the purpose of condoms, of course, for the purpose of easing pains on their knees. You know that story, DJ. DJ, we don't want to say we have distributed so many condoms and thinking that people use it for the purpose of using condoms. Yet they were used for other purposes. How significant is that problem? We keep on raising it, but we don't take interest on it. Can you, next time when you come, just do a small research on that and see how significant is that problem? And why do people use this thing that lubricant is working? Maybe it's also an area of research moving forward to that. Maybe it can be used not in a condom, have it separate from the condom for the old people to use it for their needs. And under infrastructure, DG, I do understand the frustration and the pressure that you have in terms of the budget cut. But there is an issue, I think it was last financial year, that there are hospitals that do not have mental hospitals. And we coupled it with the pressure on drug abuse. And you find that those young people, yes, they are old people, but mostly the young people, are put together in normal wards that are supposed to be used for patients in hospital, and the danger that is associated to that. I use a case of my province, for example. We don't have it at all in Mpumalanga. Can't we prioritize those provinces? Can you come back to us with that? What are your plans on that? We really would want to see us. We can't pretend as if we don't see the impact of drugs in our communities, and those people who are mentally challenged and who are put together with patients in hospital, and the risks involved in terms of that. I agree with Honorable Kaula, the mass gathering. Can you analyze that? Because as you were presenting, I did not think it's the way he's putting it now. There are a number of mass gatherings that we have in the country. I was thinking of the new church that we have now in South Africa that has got a membership of 35,000 almost every day in a week. So how best do we come in as a department? If we do, is it for free? Or do we put some cost there? So it has to, we may not respond today, but it means that go and analyze it. When you say mass gathering, what do you mean, and come back to us. In terms of bills, how many bills are we expecting this year from the department so that we can prepare ourselves? The president, during the State of the Nation address, he prioritized the HIV awareness campaign, but I don't see it. It might be there, I don't know. I don't see it in your APP. And how are we going to do it? If you can't just command and we keep quiet as a department. The issue of reduced targets, it was covered by Honorable Kaul. You have, I will say you because I don't know the reason, the budget for TB has been reduced. Yet there is a big relationship between HIV and AIDS. How are we going to balance the two? For HIV, the budget has increased, for TB has been reduced. How are we going to balance the two? We understand, DJ, that the provincial audit outcomes are for provinces. For us, we want to see all provinces getting unqualified audit opinions. So I have a problem if you only target one, because we have touched on it. We would want to see all of them receiving unqualified audit opinions. Let's try. Let's not fail before we try. Let's make sure, try our best to assist provinces to get unqualified audit opinion. The last one is on, the second last one. For 3 years, in terms of clients tested on HIV, is 10 million. What informs that figure? Why 10 million in 3 years? Why do you target 10 million? Is there a reason behind that? And on the health services export entry, you must, I think there's a need that you go and see what is happening there. In the Bombo Water Post, when we had the provincial week last year, you had only two people working there with computers which are not working. And what they requested, they would want to be identified, something that will identify them in the form of a uniform, because they just look like any person. That is why many people don't take them serious as well. So I think that has to be looked at. Yeah, those are issues from my side, DJ. In terms of your responses, there's a request that Honorable Kaula, once this has got another engagement, if you could start with his question. There are those that need detailed responses which you may bring later, and some of them are comments that say come back with this so that we can take it from there.
Thank you, Honorable Members, and thank you, Chair. I will start with the Honorable Member, just to say that if you have not received the NHI review, the report that you normally The one that has not been completed now is for this past initial year. But for each year we conduct, and we can tell you exactly what the status is in each NHI pilot site in terms of those areas that are being implemented. So can I just establish if honourable members have received any of those reports? We conduct reviews every year. That's why, I mean, for me, it's as easy as we can make all of them available. The COO can send them actually today. So what we do, we take it. Remember, honourable members, we...
Can I just come in? Can we agree, take a principle agreement that we are your committee? It can't be general that you send it to everybody and expect that you're going to receive it. Once you finalize the report, make it a point that the committee receives all committee members. We are not many, we are just 10.
Okay.
Yes.
So can I request
that
at least the previous one, that we send them immediately?
Okay.
This one that is still, I think the COO, once they finish the review, they will send it.
Okay.
Because it's standard to our monitoring system to see where we're doing well, where we're not doing well. And actually, in those reports, we even have a dashboard that tells us in which districts and in which areas are we failing and in which areas are we doing well. So it's a very objective reporting. It's not done by us, it's done independently by other partners. So if it has not been received, may I apologize for that oversight. The second one about the budget recast, what I think, Chair, has been the case, we've been in discussion with the Treasurer about the performance in terms of national health insurance. Remember, you had the in-kind grant that was held nationally. And then we have the small amounts in provinces. Now, we sort of negotiated with provinces that for the money that are allocated to them, it's better if they use the things that are significant, like purchase of equipment, purchase of things that will contribute to service delivery. So we sort of mapped out, and our view was that for this financial aid, we must do away with the grant and prepare for the creation of the fund. And Treasury's view was that we should continue until the fund is ready. So this is where we are to discuss the fund. But in addition to the reviews that we conduct, we also look at the performance to say where exactly has the money been spent and on what, and we do that per province. So we'll share that with you as well. Honourable members, for the ideal clinic, our target was that we have about 1,000 clinics that we consider to be ideal. Like I said, we've come up with a tool where we've classified clinics in terms of we and I want to use an example with the hotels. You know, with hotels we've got 4-star, 3-star, 2-star, and so on. But with the ideal clinic, we said we'll turn them gold, platinum, diamond. Now those are the ones that we say, yes, they fit the description of ideal. It's just that some excel more than others. But if you are silver or bronze, we can't consider you ideal. It means you must aspire to be either gold, diamond, I mean gold, platinum, diamond. So far, we had put a target of 1,000, but we are now at 500. We didn't reach the target. We can give you a list of those clinics that we have considered ideal. But for them to be visible, honorable members, we are also branding them so that you don't have to go looking for them. You can know that it's ideal because the way it's painted, the way everything. So you can point you to a few, actually, that I've visited some of them and going from province to province visiting to see whether they comply. I'm actually pleased with some of those that we've considered ideas. And we can send you a list, honorable members, for you to go and visit. For us, it's going to be important to that was the cost to be done. With regard to EMS, yes, you're asking a very important question. When is this going to happen? We would like the provinces to comply immediately. But of course, they have resource constraints regarding changing every ambulance to be here. Remember we said they have one color. So they'll have to change all of them and make sure that they're the same color. But it's not only for the country, it's the color so that South Africans must know, but it must also, consistent with what you said, Honourable Member, it must also be linked with a campaign, communication campaign, so that people know that in South Africa, when you see anything yellow, you must know it's an emergency. So that it's emergency vehicle, so that when it passes them and there's an accident, they know that it shouldn't because it's an emergency vehicle. But the second one is about the number. We still have to get formally the Department of Communication. They have to give us that number. It is not derived from us. I think those are the two key things that are not implemented as yet. And I must confess that, yes, we have not reached that target. But where we really need to get into a discussion is with municipalities. Because remember, for some municipalities, it's still their competence, but they need to relinquish those functions to the provinces. Because it's an important principle that you have to establish. Maybe post-government elections will be easier with the new administration at a local government level to explain that this function is no longer their competence, but the competence of the province and provincial administration. The next one on mass gathering, can I just explain briefly, Honourable Members? Mass gathering is an international WHO-described process. It's not just for family events, and I agree with you with the 35,000 people. It's actually events where you have a certain number of people, like for instance, a huge number, festival, World Cup, Olympic, like for instance, church, where you have 35,000 people. It's just to make sure that when you have such gatherings, we look at our sanitation, access to water, so that there's no spread of disease. I think it has to do with that. But we also work with the provincial administration to ensure that our emergency services are on alert in the event there's an outbreak or in the event there's a problem. So we have at least these festivals, these religious gatherings, big ones. It's not the small church gatherings, but the major, the massive ones. Sporting concerts, rallies, big events. We have to always make sure that there are services and to prevent outbreaks. And in doing that, people must have proper sanitation. We investigate that. We check if they have access to water. For instance, if it's hot, people must not be exposed to excessive heat and they end up with heat stroke and so on. And emergency medical services. So I think that's the principle. It's not about the small weddings in the face. And we never with regard to the state of readiness and as a problem, can I just say to honourable members, I know that this is a concern to all of us, but just to give you a sense of comfort, that the mosquito is a vector. They transmit Zika, which is the mosquito. The South African mosquito version is not the one that is similar to the one in the America, in Latin American population. So at the moment, the only risk I think that one would be exposed to is perhaps through sexual transmission, which we've seen in some of the cases. But then that would mean people who come from Latin America, males who get into intimacy with South Africans, or it would be very small amount. But what we've done, we had a cricket event in Eastern Cape, had one case of people who came from the island, Caribbean island, who had come to watch cricket. And we monitored them very closely. And another one who came from Colombia. So those are instances that we've had. The difference is deeper. It's not like Ebola where you can measure temperature when they come into the country. And I guess the difficulty is also, you know, if a woman is pregnant, she will not know it immediately. But for neural tube disorders, the nice thing is that we give people folic acid as a preventative measure. But with the, for microcephalus, we obviously know when the baby is born. But the outbreak, at least it's education, information, and people must use condoms. And this is what we encourage, particularly if they are going to be intimate with people who come from infected regions. The one that I would be worried about, honorable members, is yellow fever, because it's just across the border, and it's Angola. So, and we've seen a number of deaths in Angola. And this is where I think we need to really redouble our efforts in our port of entry to ensure that we demand those yellow certificates irrespective of who the people are. Everyone must produce, particularly if they come from high-risk areas. The one about circumcision, I agree, honorable members, maybe our communication, particularly in local languages, is important, just to, you know, inform the public, and also inform the public about services that are available. I don't think we've done that aggressively. You know, it's just known to those who come to use our facilities and our services, I mean, who come to our facilities and who use our services. The training for cervical cancer policy, we are also training the trainer at the moment. So we've targeted only those who train, so that it can be train the trainer program, so we can share the training plan with you that has been developed by the team. With regard to the Lindelan clinic, I was just confirming with our colleagues that actually it is currently under the Department of Home Affairs. And it is supported by the West Rand district, particularly with regard to referrals. But if, for what the services are for the West, from the West Rand district that are rendered, if they are still inadequate, we obviously have to step in and see how we can support. Because at the moment it's still supported by the district. So if the capacity is still a concern, we'll go and investigate how we can help the capacity. A hospital in Eastern Cape, I wasn't sure of the name of the hospital. Nesinai. Yes. I'll just follow up with our program and provide a written response. Yes, I agree, honorable member, that perhaps the health, with basic education, provided it, but it's quite clear that they are not following the guidelines. So maybe we need to start again and reintroduce the guidelines for early childhood development, for the school, for workplace, every sector. Just to say these are the guidelines for the types of food that must be provided. The shortage of nurses, yes, it is a concern, but it's not just a concern. Can I just take this opportunity, honorable members, to say that the UN Secretary General has appointed two heads of state, our country, the President of South Africa, the President of France, to solve this problem of the human resource for health. Now, the aim of this, in fact, it has 23 commissions, and one of the commissioners, the commissioner is Margaret Chan, who is the DG of WHO, the ILO, and the OECD, the Secretary General of the OECD, as well as the chair of the AU Commission, Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini. But it also has commissioners from other countries across the whole world. And the significance of that is that they're saying human resource for health, meaning health workers, should not be viewed as a as an expenditure or a cost. They should be viewed as an investment for the country. And the recommendation is that in 2030 we must have 40 million employed health workers. And in Africa alone, there's a shortage of about 18 million. And remember, if there's a shortage of 18 million, it means the percentage is much smaller in South Africa than it is in the rest of the continent. So at the moment, we've got a draft of documents, and the person who's leading the experts who are assisting this process is the editor of the Lancet. And we would like to sort of, if we have an opportunity, to come and present to Parliament, because some of the members, commissioners, are parliamentarians as well. Like, for instance, the parliamentarian from Japan is a member of the Parliament. So it's a mixture of different people. And they have taken nursing as a key area of interest. As a result, the commissioner is actually the president of the International Council of Nursing, because they've identified nursing as a key game changer. And meaning, if we increase the numbers, it probably nursing will be one. But it's also the recognition that it's a, you know, female-driven profession, and to deal with the gender issues, maybe we need that in addressing the human resource for health. So I thought I needed to say that as part of us meeting the millennium, I mean the sustainable development goals, one area that we have to address is that on human resource for health, and the focus will be on this. And I hope we'll have an opportunity to share with you. So we are discussing whether for those countries that are benefiting, honorable members, from South Africa, like if we lose nurses to Saudi Arabia, should there be a levy for Saudi Arabia just so that we can use the funds? To, because we subsidize the training of nurses, then these are the discussions. But others have put it differently to say equally. South Africa is a recipient of health workers that come from elsewhere in the continent. Should South Africa also pay the levy? So they said we need to have a balance on how we respond to this. As we lose, we also need to also understand that we gain health workers from other countries in the continent. With regard to doctors, I guess Honorable Lemba wanted to say from Cuba. We do have a program for these doctors who return. But I also think that it's the obligation of the parents, because the reason for return may vary. One, it can be that they fell ill and they have to come back. In that case, we also give them a chance when they recover to go back. The second is instances where there's been misconduct. Obviously, we can't. And the parents will have to repay some of the money. And then three is because of performance, if they've not performed. In that case, we put a program in place to support them, because we have to understand the circumstances. When it comes to Western Cape, historically, Western Cape did not send students. But we have been looking at whether can we necessarily recruit from Western Cape, because it doesn't mean Western Cape does not have Indian students who qualify. Yes, so there's a process to also recruit in the Western Cape those students who must be trained in Cuba. Cervical cancer, yes, honorable member, and I await the question as soon as you have it. Honorable member, about the baseline targets and their reduction, you know, I'm going to give the COO an opportunity to respond specifically. But what we've tried to do over the years, Treasury has come up with guidelines about how we should develop our annual performance plan. The DPME has also come up with guidelines on how we should develop our performance annual performance plans. The AG interrogates our plans also on the annual performance plans as the audit committee. So we've had to take all the comments from every stakeholder and use that to revise our plans. And the advice was that we needed to sort of make this smart our indicators smart.
Mm.
And we try to do that as best as possible. But I'll ask the COO to respond.
Thanks, Gigi. Now, I think to add to what Gigi has been saying, our targets have not been reduced really, other than in programs which have severe resource constraints of budget cuts, where we had to reduce targets in order to make the objectives that we're hoping to achieve smart and realistic and achievable within the time frame. So it is not actually true that there's been a severe reduction in targets across all programs.
So, honourable members, one question that was raised by the portfolio committee was with regard to our selection of the indicators. They have said some of the indicators are annual,
mm-hmm.
and targets are annual, others are quarterly. So we indicated that for the annual one, we have some milestones so that we can still report even on the annual ones. It doesn't mean when we report it will just be for the quarterly one and the annual one will postpone. So what we'll do in the first quarter when we come to report, we'll also present those milestones so that you have a sense of what the milestones are. Honourable Member, on the mental hospital, can I indicate that we actually commissioned an investigation and based on that investigation there's actually a report, Honourable Member, that has been produced. But in addition, the minister has personally went this week to the province to discuss with them the report. This work that we did with the National Treasurer. The investigation was commissioned by the Office of the Accountant General, and they have finalized that investigation. It is indeed a concern. This is why the minister went also to discuss this with the province. The questions on MRC and the people who are affected by TB and cancer, particularly with CKCK and Port St. John's. Honourable members, when we started the work on to set up what we call the one-stop shops, the one-stop shops were mainly aimed at, because what we've seen is that over the years, the people who are supposed to be compensated for non-related diseases as a result of having worked in the mines, we've been putting a burden on them because they have to travel all the way to Johannesburg to go to CCOG so that they can take their compensation and so on. So we decided to bring services closer to them.
Mm-hmm.
But in choosing that, we decided to identify mining sending areas.
Mm-hmm.
And the mining sending areas, the biggest one was actually Eastern Cape.
Mm-hmm.
And those areas that you identify as having a high burden of TB and cancer, lung cancer, is precisely because they've been a mining sending area. So, Dr. Krishnasani, we appointed students who were unemployed and now they are, we call them support officers. Some of them have helped us capture data for, how many, 500,000 files. And in those files, we had to see, because what has happened is that in those 500,000 files, close to, I think we'll get the exact number. Some of the mine workers, meaning people who work in the mines, they had never claimed, even though they should have been claiming. So based on that, there's been a campaign, at least to compensate about over 100,000 of them. Meaning we've been able to identify that at least over 100,000 mine workers should have been compensated just through this exercise of identifying those funds, because they were lying there dormant, and we're able to look at each and every file. So it's a process, and the nice thing now is that they don't have to travel all the way to Johannesburg. At least there's a one-stop center in the Eastern Cape, and there's one that must be established in Northern Cape, and there's one in Carletonville and Bellasport. So I think there'll be four. So meaning Limpopo will have one, meaning each mining sending area must have that one-stop shop where people don't have to travel all the way. They can check their lump, whether they're diseased, and then use that as a basis of them preparing a report, and then they can be compensated. So it's a very positive development so far. So we can actually give you a report about how many of those come from the city, and St. John's, precisely because they were mining sending areas. That is the explanation that I can provide. And it will also help them to access services, because of that service that has been established, it was launched, we are only left with the one in Bellasport that must still be established. The Bambisana Hospital, I will ask Ian if you can check in our report. We had identified specific facilities that had to be refurbished and others built, and I've just checked. I don't have that information now. Provide the report for you. Provincial Aid Council, honourable members, this is one area where we actually literally went per province to investigate whether in the Premier's office is there a Provincial Aid Council, because that was the decision that every Premier must house the Provincial Aid Council consistent with the National Aid Council. So SANAC has done that review. The Free State one is very active. KZN, I think, has the best Provincial Aid Council in the country. Mpumalanga, it has improved after there were discussions. And in fact, the Premier took leadership in establishing and ensuring that it was functional. So we've got a report per province on the status of each Provincial Aid Council. We can share that with you. With regard to chair communication, yes, indeed. I'm going to ask Ms. Rain. You want to comment on the communication?
Thank you, honourable members. We do have a communication strategy in the department that has been approved, and we are implementing it. In response specifically to the achievement by the DG, why we did not publicize it, I think the DG might want to respond to that, because it was a deliberate decision for us not to make it public in that manner. However, we have specific events that we publicize. We do have on the newspapers as and when it's important, either for NHI or for Ideal Clinic or any other event that the minister is busy with or the department has achieved. But sometimes we do editorials in the newspapers and any other communication avenues that we are busy using. So we take note that the members always indicate that we are not visible, but we are implementing the strategy. And we also have a forum with the provincial communication head, which meets on a quarterly basis, and we monitor the social media, the responses. So we also have a tool in the department where we monitor all the incidents or the communication or the newspaper media clips or whatever findings that is where the department is cited, and we read that on a daily basis, and we respond where we have to. So, but we take note that the members are still indicating that there's still a gap, and we will improve on that. Okay, honourable members, the one about communicating my appointment, Chair, I must say that just out of immediacy, we have not done it. We're just being humble about this appointment. First, we add on that in principle, but we can clarify. Because I think it's multiple appointments and it's a little bit problematic, because then every time, like for instance last week I was appointed to chair an oversight, an international oversight committee, to look at whether every country implements the international health regulations given the Ebola outbreak. And so that's why, Chair, I think I'll take it on a bilateral. The visit to mental hospital, yes, Chair, we can share on confidential grounds, share the report with you, and we'll ask the National Treasury if they can allow us to share about their findings after the investigation. Condom distribution, yes, we can actually, we're going to work with MRC to look at whether it's a basis for these claims that are made by other people, you know, about the condoms when they rub their arthritis. These are unsubstantiated things, but we can check whether they've got a basis or not. On infrastructure, like I said, honourable members, like I said, there's actually a high level panel that has been established to look at drug abuse. We've got a team of our officials that participated in these deliberations, and I think the principle is that if you look at how the international laws have applied, particularly treaties, they've been written in such a way that when countries implement, they punish the victims, not the drug law. So at the moment, as I speak, next week, there'll be a UN General Assembly meeting to discuss the meeting. The high-level panel will be presenting their report. And I would like to share the report with you electronically, if you allow, so that you can see some of the things. They actually see health as being important in addressing this particular problem in partnership with other sectors. So we will have to develop a strategy, and perhaps what we need is to have Parliament's involvement in this. Because, in fact, in summary, they are saying if we do not intervene, in addressing the drug problem in our country, we can as well forget about all these other things that we're doing. It has become such a crisis. It requires attention and investment in resources to resolve it. So it's a big problem here. The bill from the department, we will only have two, which is the National NAFISA, National Public Health Institute of South Africa, and also NHLS. Those are the only two amendments. And we're hopeful that they will be tabled in Parliament this year. There's a prioritized campaign, I think consistent with what Ms. Rennie said. And maybe she should have mentioned that there's a provider that was awarded to run the campaign. So they are supposed to start in this financial year with a campaign on HIV, TB, and also, honorable members, on non-communicable diseases to promote healthy lifestyles. We'll come back to you with further details. A budget for TB, honorable members, yes, it seems like it's reduced, but can I just say that we're actually getting some of the funding from Global Fund, and it's quite a significant proportion, targeted mainly at TB in the mines. It's TB in the mines and TB in correctional services, TB in mining areas, as well as in schools. In addition, we've also allocated, so there's money coming from Global Fund and PEPFAR, and it's quite a substantial amount. So we didn't want to
Okay.
Double fund or two.
Mm.
For that, we are avoiding double DP.
Mm.
So we just said, okay, we'll balance the difference with these other resources and dividends. But the area that we need to beef up, there's actually a report that the NHLS and NICD presented, where they say there are specific areas in the district where we should really, really redouble our efforts in a response to TB, and the team is coming up with a plan to address that. The provincial audit, yes, honourable member, actually I agree with you, because for as long as there are provinces that are lagging behind,
mm.
we are not yet there. And to use the language that is used for the Sustainable Development Goals, they say we must respond in such a way that no one is left behind.
Mm.
I guess it's the same principle,
mm.
that no one should be left behind, and maybe our motto should be no province should be left behind. So that we all achieve unqualified aid. The 10 million target for HIV, remember when we started the HIV campaign, we had said we'd be 15 million.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you conduct campaigns, you can come up with, you know, big numbers.
Mm-hmm.
But once you institutionalize a program, the numbers are so we couldn't keep to the 15 million
mm.
because on annual basis we could show that our performance was 10 million around 9.5 million, 9.6, 9.3, so that's why we put the target of 10 million because within our health system we are also realistic because we don't want to increase the number and that the health system cannot cope. At the time when you had a campaign, remember it was a partnership, it was public and private sector, NGOs, everybody. Now these numbers that we have is the health system. Now if we have more facilities, more health workers, we can up the numbers again. But this is just a realistic number. We've seen what we've seen when we institutionalized the campaign for ACT. Port Health, Lebombo, the post and the uniform. Mr. Ren, you want to respond?
Thank you, DG. Thank you, Member. The latest development on this one is that there is a procurement process in place that we are busy with regarding the uniform for Port Health.
Okay.
So very soon you will see the difference.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable.
Thank you very much, DG. We respect the humbleness of the Director General. Yeah, like you're saying, maybe after I will get a better explanation. Yeah, it's fine. Now, let me appreciate again the presentation. DG is one of the departments that we are very much proud of as a committee, where the PG really is hands-on, has put a know-how of the department. In some departments, presentations are done by different people who are actually responsible for that. But in this department, you are one of the PGs who really knows what is happening in your department, which we really appreciate as a committee. As we do, I want to reiterate this, our oversight TV, it shouldn't be a problem because we will be monitoring what you are presenting today. Nothing else after that. You don't adjust like you did with the 10 million that now because I failed to reach my target, now I must come down.
Mm-hmm.
No. We will be looking at, I don't buy that 30 digits. Oh, no, because we have not been able to reach that. We said, no, this is what we can do. We can push ourselves. You can push yourself, don't be comfortable with what you are doing because you did not achieve. Same thing applies with the report. We will be checking what you are presenting today. We're not going to change the plan now because you're going to report I have not achieved. No, because we can't achieve, this is what we can achieve, we'll reduce the target. No. The target, there is a significant decrease. I think it's about more than 100 targets that have been. I don't know how. They will give you the numbers. We do have the number of targets 2015-16 as compared for this year. It's more than 100. It could be because of the manner in which you streamlined or tried to make your indicators smart. I don't know, but there is, according to our analysis, there is a significant decrease of your targets. So thank you very much again. We will see each other when we report. Thanks a lot. All members, just a reminder that we are meeting social development at 2.
Wow. That is the same thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
it only by 44 and 9.
Must we go back?
Yeah, I'm going back. I'm making some money.
Yeah, I'm going to go back.
Where is the new member now?
Maybe she went to lunch. She was, yeah.
Yeah, she had lunch earlier. Maybe she's been busy with me.
Do you remember Mkulule?
Hmm?
Do you remember Mr. Shorty?
Mm.
You were around. You were around.
Yeah.
Quiet.
Very.
It doesn't look like her.
Very quiet.
It doesn't
actually
speak even.
You are not
there. She seldom, I think English is also a challenge for her, but she would prefer not speaking, but she gets her point across when she wants to.
Oh, I wanted to make her to speak. I said, let me just
let the first day. Maybe I can call Lily, maybe I should go back.
Well, now it's 5:41.
Thank you.